Well, thanks to the hat here, he would sit me down and show me that sometimes an aberrant race like that is not only due to the kind of pace lines you'd select, because that's possible that you may have gotten the wrong pace line of the horse, but it may be that in that race, for example, the matchup of the horses are such that one horse figures to get such a clear early lead that none of the other sustained paces will be close enough to the pace to overcome that. That I don't know if we've mentioned that or not, but that's a useful thing to keep also in the model. How close to the pace in lengths behind at the second call does your horse need to be? Because if you have that situation at Belmont, for example, a normally sustained track, you have one early pace horse figures to make such an early lead that even though it's a sustained track, those sustained horses cannot use it to overcome it.
Let me add one. A 53.15% early that you have predicted that on his percent early in figuring it with your program. In this particular race, he may go wire to wire with a 52.50. But this is only what he ran in his last race. This race, today, it may change.
I had an example of that at Santa Anita a while back. My betting model on the unique 6.5 furlong down the hill was sustained pace. In this particular race, I had a horse in there that was very early, 54% plus. I don't remember the exact figure. And based on the figures, could have about a 5-length lead at the second call. But sustained pace is winning, and he's an early pace horse. He didn't have a 5-length lead at the second call. He was very close to the lead and reserved some of that early energy in that particular race and won. Not many people bet him, and he paid $28 because he was an early speed horse. We're not the only ones that realize that sustained pace wins a 6.5 down the hill. But there's where energy won the race.
John Brewhammer has many, many times in our classrooms pointed out that sure, you have an energy model, and you have a Brewhammer model on the readouts of early sustained factor W, but use your head. If a horse is 3 lengths ahead of everybody at the second call, how often do horses overtake such a horse? So that let Tom elaborate on this.
Well, I just want to add to what Bob had to say, because we approach the races basically the same way, and that is to analyze the fractions that are involved. And everyone we're addressing here has a copy of the Brewhammer model. That's a safe assumption, right?
Yes, sir.
Then go to the example of wage freeze in the 9th race at Santa Anita, October of 85. And you'll see exactly what we're talking about. Because here's a horse that conceivably, even with a high energy figure, conceivably could have had 7 lengths on the turn. And that's the far turn as they approach the stretch. Well, he didn't take all of those. He took 3 or 4 of them and then won by 7. But that's the advantage to having that uncontested lead. And that's what we say. Now, and Jim Bradshaw made the point a moment ago, and that's to know how far you can be behind and still win at your racetrack, at the stretch call. And the way you get around our second call, and the way you get around that, and the way you identify that, is this idea of making an alternate model from the actual results charts. And then compiling that so that you know that you can't win if you're, say, over 2 lengths behind at the second call or 3 lengths behind the second call. Because then, if you can analyze your figures and understand what, in feet per second, the advantage is at the second call so that you can quantify. I mean, you can know that you can't be 3 lengths behind, but if you don't know how to read your readouts and know what 3 lengths actually means in feet per second, you're a little lost. But if you know those two things, and all of a sudden you've got a horse with 4 lengths clear of the second call, and your model says you can't win if you're over 2, guess what you do? You know, you're like Bob Purdy, you empty your pockets at the window. But you've got to know that. If you really want to get good at this game, you've got to be able to analyze the matchups, interior matchups in these races.
Contender scan, of course, gives you the ideal program for matching up horses. We don't say that you should use all these programs we provide, but each one of them is designed to teach you the insights of a Brewhammer, of a Purdy, of a Bradshaw, of a Schmidt, of any of these people sitting here. And if you need the program to develop the insights, by all means use it. And the Contender Scan giving you the Dream Race matchup is ideal for that. And Purdy has instituted that into his new Synergism program. So you'll be always able to see the matchup before you do any other figure. Bob, what other factors are you going to put for making a model in the synergism which we don't see readily right now?
There's a new factor. We call it turn time. I don't know if that's the true definition or not, but your rankings will read WEST. Factor W, early pace, sustained pace, and the T is for turn time. Turn time is weighted. You're going to be asked, if you use this program, how you want to see your rankings. And your choices are factor W, early pace, or sustained pace. So you're asking the computer actually to rank it on what you perceive to be the bias of the track. So if your track is an early pace track, then you'd select early pace. The turn time, and I'll tell you what the formula is nothing more than the first section, first fraction, plus the third fraction, added together and divided by two. Then they add the second fraction to that and divide it by two again. Plus whatever you have chosen for your ranking. If you chose early pace, it'll then add the early pace to it and divide it by two again. So your turn time is the only factor in synergism, which is weighted by the track bias. The others are left alone.
And the turn time is actually it's no longer a secret formula, but it's a secret formula in the sense that it is the most synergetic of all of the formulas in synergism. It's got more combinations of factors, all of which tend to make it exceed the sum of its parts in its predictive value. Dick Schmidt, it just came awake again, and he's been using synergism without benefit of the manual that will accompany it, and without benefit of too much instruction, just as he tested Q-Scan with no knowledge. We asked him to test this. What's the report thus far, Dick?
Hot damn. Oh, it's a good program. If we ever get a final version of it, it's going to be pretty good.
The final version is done.
The final version, I have heard that at least 35 times.
This table will be, going to history. 40 years from now, people will be hearing this, and they'll think that it isn't done yet.
Let me address that before you continue. There never will be a final version of any of our programs, because we're always researching and trying to make it better. Before Dick comments on his use, he's actually used it.
That's pretty good what you said.
It really is. He's learned to escape the loop we've had him in for the last few months.
Right. The thing about synergism, and that's Howard's name for it, it's nothing more than a phase three program, and Tom Brohammer uses the exact same program with his variants. So the readouts are exactly the same. And that was the acid test that the program had to meet, was could it keep up with Tom Brohammer's results? And it does it pretty effectively. 90% of the time, as Dick will attest, you'll get the same rankings. Now, this program is for people who don't have a Tom Brohammer. If you've got a Tom Brohammer, you don't really need the program. You just put in his variance, and in your phase three, you're going to get the exact same horses. There aren't going to be much difference. We're talking about 90% of the time, it's going to be the same one.
There will be a way to follow it up, though, and some of you will find it. We're going to offer a $100 prize to the first person who figures a way to follow up a synergism. And I'm serious here. Virtually all of you out there can take a program and make it not work if you try hard enough. But what we want to do is offer a $100 prize to the person who can do it the most creatively when you get So, considering that the program will be a little more expensive than what we've been charging in the past, because an awful lot of research went into this, and it is almost that mythical program that Dick Schmidt jokingly mentioned in the preamble to the follow-up newsletter. It's not quite, you don't get it all off the last page line, but it's getting very close.
That was a joke?
Yes, that was a joke.
A joke.
Sure, now you tell me.
There is no miracle program in which you always use just the last race. But the other factors that Dick brought out in that joking announcement of everything scanned are pretty well embodied in synergism.
This program is about as close to everything scan as you're ever going to get. I have been very impressed, and I kid Bob about all the changes he's made, but each time, the reason this program works is because Bob has put so many hours into thinking about every line of this program, and each one has been tested and retested. And he has run some races, I know, at least 50 times. And I have done the same thing over and over again. And it's getting to be almost spooky. This program is very strong and very powerful. The bad news is you still have to select your contenders. And you also have to be a little cautious with your pace lines. You have to get a representative pace line. Whenever you use a program that's doing a lot of things for you, such as Synergism or UltraScan, when you say a horse is a contender, you really have to be serious about that. There's none of this tossing a horse in, well, I'll just see what he can do. He'll throw it off. You have to put only legitimate contenders in there. But if you can do that, I hit consistently with all versions of this program. It's getting better all the time. I'm able to hit in the mid-70s with it.
The beautiful part about it is that its lead-off readout is the lead-off readout in Contender Scan. You see the immediate matchup. And if you put in a wrong horse with this program, you do have that marvelous opportunity to ignore it because you can see right away that it's a given fraction. Michael?
No, I just wanted to make the point, to bring it back to the Brohammer model for just a minute, Bob's new program, which is wonderful, easy to use, and a joy, very important to keep a model on that because the way that the variant is being made now is parallel to our Meridian variant concept. It's not exactly the same. It's been refined over and over by Bob. But because of that, the use of that technique, it makes keeping the model to see what the track is favoring and what the matchups are favoring very crucial.
Sure.
Would you agree with that, Bob?
Absolutely, yeah. The Meridian variant, well, the adjustments will be made in the program using a Meridian variant only if adjustments are necessary. It will not use the Meridian variant if there is no adjustment necessary. And that will be in the manual how you treat that. So it's very easy to program to work. You don't need any adjustments except your cross adjustments.
And we're still on the subject of the Brohammer model. But with this one you have, it spells out for West Coast people, west of the Mississippi spells out west, which is W, early, sustained, and the turn time formula. For the East Coast people, it'll be east.
Early average,
average,
sustained.
It'll still mean average will mean W, but... but what you're getting is one new synergetic factor, which we have given you before. We hit it in Contender Scan, but you're getting that turn time formula, which is a dynamite readout to add to your Brohammer model when that program becomes available. Now, I want to address something here that everybody's got an opinion on. It. All the fellows here are pretty adamant about this. We gave you phase three, and people kept saying, well, what's new? What's next? So then we gave you UltraScan. If you'll recall, in UltraScan we said that UltraScan was designed to help you if you did not have the insights of a Purdy or a Brohammer or a Bradshaw or a Burt Main or a Pozzola or a Ginny Butler or a Glenn Smock or a Richard Schmidt or some of the other charter members who aren't at this session, we would give it to you through the medium of advanced algorithms, mathematical formulae. And so then we build up what we would say two camps. Not armed, I hope, but two camps, the UltraScan user and the Phase 3 user.
One of which is right.
Well, Birdman's got some scripture on that. You can get to heaven, you can approach the gates of heaven from two different paths. The reason there are two programs then, and there are going to be more, is that some people are analytical and they want a Phase 3. A Brohammer would, if you gave Brohammer a promise that he'd get every winner with UltraScan, he still wouldn't use it because half the thrill of cashing his tickets comes from knowing that he made the analysis. Am I being...
I think you're right, sure.
All right, there are the rest of you who think that the mysterious and mystique of UltraScan is just up your alley, and we have people with marvelous reports on their win. J.R. Bridges came up with a beautiful 84-page report on his winnings with UltraScan. So what are we doing now? Are we building two more camps, with one with Synergism, Advanced Phase 3, and another with Jimmy's efforts, and we've been working together very closely on in the energy field? No. Some of you will want energy, and some of you will want synergism, and some of you will say, I want them both. And there lies the rub I'd like all these people to discuss. Why should you have both? Why should you have UltraScan and Phase 3 right now? They are, it's counterproductive to try to mix them, right, fellas?
I agree.
I get that question all the time.
Yeah, sure. Everybody asks it.
And
so.
I always think of the zigzag theory. They go to Phase 3 and they hit a loser and they say, oh, UltraScan had it. And then they'll go to UltraScan, hit a loser, and Phase 3 had it. Now here's two races. If they're playing either program, they're 50% and they haven't won a race.
That's correct.
And they can do that day after day after day, zigging back and forth frantically. Their models get confused, and more importantly, their thinking gets confused.
The subject of this session is the Brohammer model, and that's the key. It doesn't matter which program you're using. If you're keeping your model with your program, it's immaterial which one. They both are winners, and it's just a matter of personality, which one you prefer. As long as you're keeping your model, it's immature.
Yeah, I'd like to add and stress this one point to everybody that's listening to this tape, that without some type of record keeping, you know, commonly referred to as a Brohammer model of some type, there's no way that you can use the methodology successfully, whether you have Phase 3 or UltraScan. It's absolutely necessary to have some type of record keeping to become successful.
On a long-term basis, you can dawdle around at 60% without keeping any records, but you'll never have the confidence without keeping records to make you bet enough money to make that 60% payoff. An $11 mutual at 60% is 12 times 11, and you just multiply 12 times 11 and subtract 80 from it, you see you're making your profit.
You're keeping a report card on yourself.
Yeah. But will you bet the $20, $30, $40, and $50 to make that mutual and that 60% payoff? It doesn't matter that you only get 60 or 63% winners, so long as you have a record of knowing that you are your possibility of getting it consistently. It's that thing we hear so much here in Las Vegas from clients. I'm doing it, but I don't know how I'm doing it, so I kind of hold back in my betting until I'm sure. And this fellow was doing it for 2 years. He was averaging 63% for 2 years, but he didn't want to make a big bet because he wasn't sure why he was doing it. Now, I said, here, look at this. Keep this model. And if he keeps a model, now he'll know why he's winning, and he'll be able to make the larger bet and capitalize on his win.
For some reason, keeping those records and seeing what you're actually doing is frightening to some people, because I don't think they want to face the fact that maybe they're not doing as well as they think they should be doing, or as well as they could do. But the sooner you find out, the sooner you correct it, and the sooner you can go to a higher proficiency.
The other side of that coin is that when people do keep a record, they find out they're doing a whole lot better on a consistent basis than they thought, and now they have no excuse not to do it full time. And people who are psychologically want an excuse not to win will use not keeping records as justification.
You know, Howard, you have to keep records.
Yes, yeah. Sir.
Difficult.
Howard, I'd like to make a point which comes from 12 years of Catholic education, and that is that if you write clearly, it helps in your record keeping, especially in the Brohammer model. It's a small point. It's what I've always found, that if your writing is kind of sloppy and it's all over pages and all, the more orderly and clear you keep your physical records, the more clear your betting will be, the more clear your thinking will be about handicapping. This is a small point.
Okay, to summarize model keeping with Phase 3, you must yourself try keeping the model both ways, with the fractions, ranking them 1 through 5 with your 5 contenders, and then with a pace summary. Generally speaking, now don't take this as gospel now, prove it to yourself. Generally speaking, at your major tracks, the pace summary, early sustained factor W, will give you the best model. At the smaller tracks, as Ginny has said, as Bert has said about Finger Lakes, and we haven't even talked about Blue Ribbon Downs, it's the fractional compugraph from which you should make your model. So now let's go on to how to keep a Brohammer model with UltraScan, because one of Tom's biggest fans, who takes his variant service, J.R. Bridges, who gave us the first really true year-long race-by-race report on UltraScan, uses the Brohammer variant in the open adjustment of UltraScan. Here's his record. It's in the seminar manual, but 184% ROI. 84%. In other words, every time he puts a dollar through a window, he got 84%, 84 cents profit from that dollar. 1123 average mutual. 2,451 races. 63.5 win percent. Longest loss streak, 6. Happened twice. Next longest, 5. It happened 3 times. 5 times with a 4-race lose streak, and the rest were all 3s and 2s and 1s. He played everything that ran except maidens who had the first-time starters in the race. Of the 20, he played all but 300 races of the whole year he played. And that was his result. And he, in his preface, says, I'm not really good like these other guys. He netted, on win only, $6,900 and some odd on $2 bets, which on a $20 bet, you know, would be $69,000 a year. Not bad for a fellow who thinks that he's not very good. How did he find out that he was fairly good? He kept a Brohammer model, and he kept his records on everything, race by race, and that's how he knows now that he can count on doing that. And his worst loss, which happened twice in 2,451 races, was 6, worst loss streak. That's a little high. I'd like to see him get that down to 4, but it didn't seem to bother him. When you look back, look over your record, and you see what you've done, you lose the fear that something disastrous is going to happen to you.
It's the nature of our business that a successful method like Dr. Sarton's has its detractors, people that don't win. I have never met anyone that keeps a model that's a loser.
So how do you keep a model on UltraScan now? It's quite simple. There are two ways. You're using vanilla UltraScan, and you don't want to make any adjustments. You keep a model on Ultra Plus variant, early, late, and percentage early, which is more vital to UltraScan. Now, if you're using ComboScan format, you'll generally find that your manual adjustment in ComboScan will be your dominant UltraScan readout. So there you would use raw, manual, and computer adjusted with early, late, and percentage early. And you do exactly as you would with a Brohammer model with phase 3. If you're not making any adjustments, you merely see what the balance is between ultra raw and ultra invariant. If it's the 2-3s or 3-2s are winning most of your races, you want a horse to be in the top 2 raw and top 3 variant, whichever your model shows. So it's just exactly the same thing. Don't treat ultra or ultra invariant as any different than 2 variations of factor W. All you're asked to do here is to keep a model on 2 more readouts. So it's the same principle, and people are winning with a Brohammer model in UltraScan just as they're winning in phase 3. But you don't keep it any differently, and you don't go searching around for factor W in UltraScan because we're using factor W in phase 3. Use the dominant readouts of whichever program you're playing. Now, why are we giving you synergism on the one hand, and then shortly thereafter giving you an energy program? I'll turn that over to Jimmy Bradshaw, because he feels just as keenly and just as, well, it suits his mental set and my mental set. Energy, to me, is the quintessential concept of handicapping. And, of course, synergism contains energy. But Jimmy has concentrated solely on energy figures and has done some real miraculous things.
When I first met Howard, I sat at New Orleans at the fairgrounds, and Howard did 2 things. He would run an APB and a percent early, only with his hand calculator. And I couldn't understand at that time how Howard was able to find the horses that he was going to play with just this one figure. But through this research and talking with Howard, I have been impressed with energy, because I know energy exertion. I know what causes this exertion, why some horses win, why some horses lose. And by applying the energy to a horse race, you're making it rather simple to where people can understand it, where people can go along with this type of work. So I knew how strongly Howard felt concerning energy, both total and percentage early. And I've done tremendous amount of research, both at Blue Ribbon Down. I have done it at the Oak Lawn, Fairgrounds, Louisiana Downs, numerous tracks in the Midwest. And I think that this is the one of the ultimate ways to go. As we say, synergism by Bobby and energy by Dr. Sarton may be two camps, but it's all the same thing. Which fits the person's personality more.
That's the key, Jimmy. The personality of the individual should have a program with which that individual feels the most confident. And that's the only reason for us giving you a multiplicity of programs. Bob knows that. Bob knows that he's incorporated a lot of energy, especially in that very delicate, weighted turn time formula, which embodies not only energy, but deceleration, if you pardon the expression.
That energy exertion, as soon as Bob inserted the turn time as weighted according to the bias of your track, it was inserting energy into that. Ultrascan has energy that is inserted into the algorithms of Ultrascan program, because this is how it's determined on the total energy of the horse and the race that he ran in. So all of the programs... this is Howard's baby. This is something that he has been working on because he knew that this is the direction. All we have done is to research it and apply it in other type programs to where it can be used by individual users.
The irony of the whole thing is that with all of the advances, with all the work that we do, how do we check to see that the program is effective? By applying to it a Brohammer model. If Jimmy's particular way out experimentations with contra energy, early energy, total energy, and wind bias energy demonstrates that you can have XXXX, and if it's number one or two in wind bias, its wind correlation is in the 60% area, then you know that you have found a Brohammer model feature within a program that is effective. So the whole concept of the Brohammer model, it permeates all of our work. If you gentlemen can think of me and lady, my dear Jenny, they sometimes tell nasty jokes around Jenny and she smiles, and so they think of her as one of the boys. But when you look at pretty Jenny, you know she's not one of the boys. Thank gosh. Let's just sum up with each one of us something that someone has asked you. And before we do that, let's ask the man who is not on the tapes, the man who is controlling the microphone, the man who is a client and not a PERCO member, if he has any questions on the Brohammer model. I'm talking about Joe Ray, who makes all of our seminar tapes. Joe?
I don't know what to ask. The harder I work, the more confused I get, but I'm getting there.
Well, that's all it takes, Joe. But are you using the Brohammer model in Albuquerque?
Right, right.
That's a pretty small track.
A strange one. Suddenly, all the routes, number one APV, won 80% of them since the start of this year's season. APV is useless in the sprint so far.
Mm-hmm.
Seventh, eighth is common. But the number one and occasionally the two have won every route in Albuquerque, with two exceptions.
Okay, there's an added feature of the Brohammer model in Albuquerque. And it doesn't apply to every race. Applies in routes, not in sprints. What applies mostly in sprints, though? Anything?
I haven't found it.
Mm-hmm.
It's only been about 5 minutes and I haven't found it.
Well, Albuquerque is another one of those small tracks at which some esoteric readout might be more worthwhile than the ones that are conventional at the larger track. Have you tried Factor X?
Nope.
Give it a whirl.
I don't know where to find it.
Well, it's a combination of the first and third fraction average. It's in your old program, the one you used to have for your Commodore, before you went upgraded your computers. Go back to your Commodore, you'll find it there.
I don't know. If I could hit 80% on APV alone, I'd gladly give up the route or give up the sprints and just play routes.
Yeah, but Joe knows one thing, that a broader model is only as good as yesterday's results. That may change. And that may change.
But when you have a result like that, don't fight reality. If it says it's working in the routes and not working in the sprints, don't don't, so many people think they have to play every race. Just sit there and bet the routes and wait for the sprints to come around. They will.
A lot of people don't believe what they show on paper, too. But you get a lot of what-ifing. Even in your own records, you get a lot of what-ifing. You know, if you have a statistic like you just gave us, you know, that 80% of the routes are won by the top two APV horses, and you do the race and you've got your top two APV horses, human nature, at least within our group, will look at that and say, yeah, but that was yesterday. This race doesn't set up that way. And sure enough, that pattern will continue. But people will manage to screw it up. I mean, they just do. And I'm as guilty as anybody else of overanalyzing races at times. And that's the process. You get something that works, and you try to get around it.
We've done a lot of races, and we've written them up in the manuals, and we've gone to this long diatribe and used all these fancy words. And some fellow will say, yeah, but did you notice top class horses came in 1, 2, 3? Why'd you go to all that other work? And it's true. We've seen many races we've done and failed to look at it from that standpoint, and it was much more simple than even we tried to make it.
Well, his model at Hollywood last year showed mile and eighths won almost every race for the Warrior Warner.
Early.
First fraction?
Yeah. Ever since they opened the track?
Yeah. First fraction.
I think it was up until just the last week that it was one that didn't win that way.
Which is counterintuitive, because you always think the longer the race, the more sustained it's going to be.
Wasn't that right? Don't fight reality.
No.
If the model says it, it's true.
Could I say something, guys?
No.
Please. You were talking about all these different new programs, but I think it's still important that you learn your basic program first, and then go to something else. That happened today. A gentleman came up to me and he says, I need help. And I says, what are you using? And he says, a combo scan. And I says, well, how did you do on the phase three? He says, I didn't do well on that. I says, why are you using combo scan? Go back and learn phase three.
Jenny makes a very good point, and I think you should step back one step further. And that is, I think it should almost be mandatory, at least in your own mind, that before you get to any of these programs, you learn to do it with a hand calculator. I think that should be the basis for all your learning. You should be able to make those numbers with a calculator. Then the rest of it means something to you.
It's amazing how people resist that now that computers are so available. In the beginning, that's all we had. Everything I did was with a hand calculator. Daryl Martin, I used to get him to sit up all night. I'd pick pace lines, and he'd sit up all night and do it with a hand calculator. In fact, in the beginning, we did it with charts. We used a fifth of a second as a beaten length and just did it with plain old charts and did fairly well, but then the hand calculator, and we knew precisely. That's why right now, if you turn off all the computers in the world, we could still manage to handicap. But I calls at least 5 a week. I looked at that blue thing you sent me that shows how to do it by hand, but I don't want to go through that. What kind of a computer should I buy? And therein lies the attempt, as Dick would call it, to use a black box to tell you how to get the horse, as opposed to using your reason and your knowledge of why the reason exists.
Everybody that I've introduced the methodology to looked at it, and they read the information, and decided that they wanted to become a client. But the one thing they want first was to know, how do I get a computer?
Mm-hmm.
Because they think the computer is doing, you know, the work and picking the winner. All it does is sort the facts that you put into it. If you put the winner in, the winner comes out.
Absolutely. This is not what the computer people call a decision-making program. There's no decisions made in any of these programs. All this computer is doing for you is the grunt work a little faster, but it's giving you exactly the same numbers. There's not one factor that we use anywhere that you can't get with a handheld calculator. Not one.
That's what takes it from a system to the methodology.
Right. There are so many systems out there where you put the... And they try to hide it from me, what they're using.
Yeah, shut your brain off.
And this and this and this on every horse. And is it top jockey, top trainer, money box and this and that. And what's the speed rating in its last three divided by two and all this kind of stuff. And it spits out a horse's name. You have no idea. You're just supposed to bet the top one and hope for the...
Aren't we lucky?
There's about 96 people here. I think at least about 25 have come up to me. And you can see when they're approaching you, the look on their face, that they're winning. And then I always ask them,
And you, I bet you keep a model, and I'd say that virtually everyone who comes up and said, boy, I'm running good, keeps a Brohammer model. And the ones with problems, no, I don't keep that thing. And there's where the problem lies. They don't know what's winning, so how are they expected to bet on the winner? But roughly speaking, if you get it down to five horses, the two horses of that five who best conform to the early late model are going to be your win bets. The one that conforms best to, if you're keeping a place model, what that indicates is your placement. It's just as simple as that. You keep a model on what's winning and placing if you're playing exactives. Don't just keep it on win, or you'll do like the fellow I talked to today. He gets about 15% exactives because he doesn't know how to place model it. Any final thoughts on your model keeping, Reverend Bert May?
Well, just to go back, I think, and reiterate what people have said about folks calling up and not being willing really to do the work. And that's very frustrating as somebody that has a pretty limited amount of time anyway to get a phone call from someone who just doesn't want to do the work. They don't want a methodology. They want a magic wand. And with record keeping, and as Michael said, the journey starts a little bit by little bit. You can just do a day, do a few races. The next day, you get a couple more. Build it up slowly. It'll never let you down, and you see things that people will walk away in amazement. How did you know that it was going to do that? Well, fit the model.
I don't see whether there's any record keeping. Each computer program gives a Brohammer model readout at the content graph. You just circle the winner,
right?
The ones, twos, and threes, and at the end of a whatever period of time, you just say that the average winner is yep. three here, two here, and one here, or whatever. And that's
the record keeping. That's
so
all there is to it.
So easy.
Yeah.
People look at me like I'm some sort of a Superman when I tell them I've kept as many as 15 Brohammer models going at once. That's still 3 minutes a day.
Yeah.
Tops. You're doing the handicapping anyway. All you're doing is writing down at most four or five numbers
yeah.
on each race. How long can it take?
Well, my final comments on keeping a Brohammer model is that it's not hard work and it's not fun. It's just necessary if you want to become a successful winner.
Yeah, it's like in order to get up and do something, you got to get up first. I mean, you want to have a productive day at the office, you got to get up out of bed. And to me, keeping the model is just as simple as and natural as having to get up.
And I'd say if anyone is going to go through all the time and trouble to handicap these races, I mean, we're talking about a lot of work going into handicapping these races, and not taking the time after the fact, 3 minutes max a day, to record that effort and see what's winning, then you're just kidding yourself. You might as well give up and not play.
The Sarton methodology has its roots in psychology, and we always talk, Howard always talks about the psychology of winning. It's not the psychology of winning that just is the kind that you shut your eyes and grit your teeth and say, I'm a winner, I'm a winner. When you keep your model, you can bet with a level of confidence that you wouldn't have without that, because it's based on your own handicapping. You've made these numbers up yourself. They're from your handicapping. You've chewed your own food, and then you can bet confidently and win confidently.
It's therapeutic. It's very therapeutic. You look back on 20 races and say, gee whiz, my sustained pace at the routes or given distance, 60% of those, and my early one, X percent of the other, that's therapeutic. You have a crutch that you can lean on because you know that's the reality of your own handicapping. And that's why it's so vital.
Well, that does bring up one little thing that is so obvious that we shouldn't have to mention it. But you do have to look at this sucker once in a while. You can't just keep it.
Oh, yeah.
Keeping it is trivial. Analyzing it does take a little thought. I know a couple people that keep it never look at the sucker. It strikes me as maximum dumb, and when you look at it, you can't just glance. You have to put a little thought into it and think about it.
And it's a reality figure. Don't have a subjective Brohammer model. Don't look at the race and say the speed died and say that means that early pace is not winning. Put the numbers down. Put the real numbers down. The speed, that was for 1920s and 1930s about the speed hanging on or the closers all winning. We've got an excellent example of that in the Las Vegas manual. One client perceived that his Brohammer model had turned sustained, and it was right exactly on just the horses that were running on the lead, running so fast, they all died, and the horses who came off the lead to win were running perfect early pace rankings. Well, they were in the top two. The top one was not doing anything. So Michael brought it up earlier. Don't think that number one is best. One may be too fast, or one may be too sustained. It's got to be within the parameters of that model. Jenny?
I agree. If I don't do my homework, I don't win. I have to keep my models.
Jenny was one of the most frustrated of our handicappers, and I think the model, one of the things that turned you around, now she has confidence she can go, she can leave Yakima and go to Reno or Las Vegas and make a living with the best of us.
I own Portland right now. That's my track.
And what's more vital, a track like Portland, than knowing the model?
Energy.
Well, that's a part of the model.
Yeah.
You know, the energy range are part of the model. Look, remember, the Bible variable at your track is what's winning at your track. And if you find some of the other factors that we've introduced to you are more important to you than just W, early and late, insert them in your model. There is no set rule that says you have to keep a model precisely the way Tom kept it at Santa Anita in Hollywood Park in Del Mar. You might find other factors at your particular track are good. That's what the model is for. The model is what is, and not necessarily confined to any three given readouts. And Tom will be the first to...
Well, sure, because I've been at this as long as any of you, with you being the exception, right? And I got to tell you, as I generate these numbers right now, without a working model, they're still Greek. Because you don't know where... I mean, conceivably four or five horses could have relatively matching numbers, and if you don't know where to key into, you can't interpret them. You just can't do it.
Any last thoughts?
I just wanted to emphasize once again what you and Ginny were saying, Howard, about keeping the percentage early. Another area of confidence that will give you is that if you establish your parameters by keeping a model and you know, for example, that no horse over 52.5 ever wins at your track at a particular distance, you can have great confidence about tossing that horse, even from being a contender.
Yeah, sometimes what will happen that will confuse people is that suddenly a 54.70 wins. And you say, well, look at the results charts. The horse got a four-length lead and increased it to seven. That was a diverse, one in a million type of situation. And when that happens, your model is going to zig and zag. But I have never, in retrospect, when somebody has sent me their races, found that there was as much zigging and zagging as the user sometimes subjectively perceives. So be sure that your model is from reality and not from what you perceive and just say, oh, that's going all over the place.
Yeah, we just have a lot of tools. We ought to use them.
Yeah.
We really ought to use them.
Keep a model on your track conditions separate. Keep each one separately, good, fast, muddy, sloppy.
You can keep a model on as many things as you want. And as you grow more secure, and as you grow more proficient, you will find that you will, by natural laws of selectivity, lessen the number of factors. But if you want to start with multiple factors, go right ahead. Dict in.
I used to track everything. And every time, I still track anything that, every time they come up with a new factor or a new program, I sit and track it. I don't bet on it until my confidence level is up. But I track them.
Well, it's about time to close this down. What I want to say to you is that we told you the tapes would run anywhere from 2.5 to 3 hours. But nobody sent any questions. And I think that's a tribute to Brohammer's writing, to Dick's editing, and to my going along with it. And so, we don't want to pad and just give you tape just to give you tape. I think a pretty concise reason for keeping a model, and that reason is, quite simply, that those who are winning by attestation are keeping a model. Those who are struggling are not. Which do you want to be?